हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा 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 हरे हरे। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Verse 8. Najato ko ravendranam dordanda parirambite bhutale nupatantyasmin vinate praninam suchaha. Translation: Now, for the first time, in a kingdom well protected by the arms of the kings of the Kuru dynasty, I see you grieving with tears in your eyes. Up till now, no one on earth has ever shed tears because of royal negligence. Purport: The protection of the lives of both the human beings and the animals is the first and foremost duty of the government. A government must not discriminate in such principles. It is simply horrible for a pure-hearted soul to see organized animal killing by the state in this age of Kali. Maharaj Parikshit was lamenting for the tears in the eyes of the bull, and he was astonished to see such an unprecedented thing in his good kingdom. Men and animals were equally protected as far as life was concerned. That is the way in God's kingdom. Translation: Now, for the first time, in a kingdom well protected by the arms of the kings of the Kuru dynasty, I see you grieving with tears in your eyes. Up till now, no one on earth has ever shed tears because of royal negligence. This is an expression of King Parikshit's ideal of government. Parikshit was in a particular sensitive position because the whole battle of Kurukshetra was fought to put the Pandavas on the throne, and he was the last remnant of that dynasty. So he had a great responsibility to show that his rulership was ideal. And so much sacrifice had been given to put him on the throne. So not only did he have a position to fulfill, but he was qualified for that position. So that was actually the whole, that was the crux of the battle of Kurukshetra. Who is qualified to rule? Now, both were coming from royal dynasties. The problem was that Dhritarashtra's sons were not qualified because of lack of quality. Of course, we could say because Dhritarashtra was blind, therefore he couldn't get on the throne, etc. But that's a physical reason. But ultimately, we see that his sons were demons. And that's the real reason they shouldn't have got on the throne. So the blindness of Dhritarashtra was only a, let's say, a secondary cause of his Duryodhana not being the rightful heir to the throne. So though Dhritarashtra and Pandu came from ultimately the same line, same blood, they were in one sense authorized. It's a matter of quality. Who was the better quality? We see generally the kings that come from Manus are at least up to some level of qualification. But we see in Swayambhuva, in his reign during the first part of the day of Brahma, for 71 yuga cycles, in that line, King Vena appeared. So he was in one sense authorized because he came in that line. And he actually became the king because he was authorized, but then they saw that he was unqualified because of his conduct. He was a very cruel person, and he killed people and animals and whatnot very irregularly, not according to Dharma. So he had no sense of Dharma at all. He was very sinful and very wicked. So he was unqualified. So there was a problem. He comes in the proper line. Nobody else is claiming the throne. In fact, there was no other heir to the throne at that time. But he's unqualified. What do we do? So, obviously, if an unqualified person rules, we end up with a lot of problems in this kingdom, and that's exactly what happened. the population was completely disturbed and was out of control. Rule wasn't proper. Everyone is unpeaceful. Therefore, finally, the Brahmins decide to kill him, which is an extraordinary move on behalf of the Brahmanas, who are more or less advisors to the king. Because they were independently thoughtful, they understood this person is not qualified, we have to do something. Now, of course, should the Brahmanas use force and become like Kshatriyas and start fighting, they use their Brahminical powers of cursing. And this way, King Vena died. But then they had a worse problem because there was no ruler at all. They'd finished the line, the dynasty was finished. And then it became worse because there was the dacoits and the thieves, everybody were looting and plundering, etc. So it was a very difficult situation. So then the Brahmins solved the problem by producing Prithu. And he's actually incarnation, Shaktavish incarnation of the Lord. So they took his leg, they churned his leg somehow or other. And out of that, they got a child. So somehow they used his cells or whatever, and they produced a child who was qualified, and he became the king. And of course, he was highly qualified. Yeah, but so it solved the problem because he came from the same dynasty, Swayambhu's Manu's line. Plus, he wasn't like Vena, he was qualified. So he restored order on the earth and he leveled the land and did many things for the population. Yeah. So that shows the problem of lack of qualification, even if you come in the line of the proper line of Manu. Okay? So in the case of here in this history, Krishna supported the Pandavas and the Pandavas won. So that was the rightful line. And therefore, they were qualified to rule. And as we see here in this verse, Parikshit is saying that nobody should be grieving in this kingdom. He says, up till now, no one on earth has ever shed tears because of royal negligence. Of course, that's a rather difficult claim to make, but if there is a problem, then ultimately responsibility falls upon the king. But the king cannot do everything. He cannot solve everybody's problem. So it means that the king also has to have a good system in place, so that people work under him and they also imbibe the same qualities that the king has, so that when they rule, sub-rule, so to speak, in their jurisdictions, the same principles are applied as the king is applying. And if the king is ideal, well, then the persons under him will also act in a very nice way, an ideal way. And in this way, one can manage the kingdom and we can minimize the tears, or the lamentation, the suffering of the population. Of course, we know that human beings, being human beings, there's always some problem. Nobody is perfect, and especially if you go lower in the gunas, and you tend to get more problems, and people may quarrel more often, maybe more problems. So the rules are there, and people do break rules, unfortunately. Okay? So nothing's ever completely peaceful. But if the government is proper, then they know exactly what the rules are and they enforce the rules to the best of their ability in a very just way, so that the majority of the people can live very, very peacefully. Yeah? And in this way we can say there's no tears. Of course there's some problem with some people, but the majority is safe and it's according to the principles of Dharma. Yeah? So in this way we find the rulership was nice. Now we get a similar type of case when in Dwarka, when the Brahmana's sons kept disappearing. And it was, how could it happen? How could So he says, the responsibility of the king, it's the responsibility of the kshatriyas to protect us, because how can my sons suddenly just disappear like that? As soon as they're born, they just fly away somewhere. And I'm helpless. Therefore, the king's responsible. The rulers are responsible. So Arjuna heard that. They said, okay, I'll protect you like that. So he was also ideal kshatriya. Unfortunately, he couldn't do it because Vishnu was behind the whole scheme. So he couldn't protect those children. And then he was about to commit suicide because he couldn't fulfill his vow to protect the brahmana and his children. So that shows the attitude of the king. So Arjuna was of that nature, and Parikshit, the grandson, was also of that nature. So he felt very, very responsible to protect the people in his kingdom. This is, in one sense, is not directly bhakti. This is the varnashram system and the ideal system. Yeah, so the two were not exactly synonymous. And that is why Lord Chaitanya, when Ramananda Roy or the Madhvas, they talk about varnashram, and Lord Chaitanya not much interested in it. Kind of rejects the whole thing. And says it's all external, like that. So that's because its main goals are artha, dharma, kama, and then moksha, not prema. Yeah. So, of course, I know it's acceptable because it can be favorable for prema. It's a first step for people that don't have any spiritual interest, so it's a first step. But at the same time, it's not direct. Yeah. So therefore, there's a distinction between bhakti and karma yoga and varnashram. So this is particularly all about keeping the kingdom peaceful, etc., like that. So this is a varnashramic principle, which is detailed in the samhitas, Manu Samhita and other samhitas. There's like, I don't know, 19 or so scriptures written on how to govern the kingdom properly, and what the laws are, and how to institute the laws, and how to punish people, and whatever. So all sorts of details are given in those artha shastras. So it's distinct from bhakti, but it's not separate from bhakti. So here is one of the links between bhakti and this karma yoga varnashram system, and that is the king. he understands his duty as a varnashramic ruler, but he's also a devotee of the Lord. So this makes him more qualified than others. And the problem with Duryodhan was he may be highly qualified and he could, to one extent, rule nicely, but no devotion, didn't recognize the Lord at all, insulted Krishna, was cruel to the Pandavas or whatever like that, or fought with them, inimical to the Pandavas. So, in other words, he didn't like devotees. Didn't like the Lord, he didn't like devotees. So his, on that grounds, he was not qualified to rule in spite of all of his other good qualities. Vena was an example. He didn't have any good qualities, but at least Duryodhana, he had some skill in managing, and he could make some people happy. But ultimately, he was also completely useless because he rejected the Lord and didn't respect the devotees. Here we find Parikshit was ideal because he had the qualities to rule, plus he had that extra quality, he was a devotee of the Lord. Respect to the Lord, respect to the devotees. Yeah. And therefore the implementation can be quite proper. This is what we call the Daiva Varnashram system. We still have to separate that from bhakti. This is Daiva Varnashram, it's a system, but it's not exactly bhakti, because bhakti means there's nothing to do with government at all. Bhakti is chanting the holy name, worshipping the Lord. Yeah? We see, for instance, that Parikshit and his childhood is worshipping a form of Krishna, and Ambarish had dedicated his life, in spite of being the king of the world. He let all the ministers do everything, and he was just doing his bhakti. So there's a little bit of a difference. He didn't really like ruling the kingdom, which was his varnashramic karma yoga duty. He did it in the way of giving responsibility to everybody else, and then he just absorbed himself in worshiping the Lord. That was just the bhakti aspect. Yeah. So there's a little distinction there. So Nevertheless, the proper ruler has to have some devotional service, and this makes his rulership successful. The people can claim to be devotees, or claim to be in other countries because they don't recognize Krishna, but at least they can claim to be religious. Some show themselves as religious, but it's not the name, and it's not just the formalities, it's actually one's deep conviction and of who the Lord is. We have to have the proper belief in the proper Lord. If we have a belief in the Lord who is a material being or something, or some imaginary entity, it doesn't work. So we do have to have proper tattva, understanding of who the Lord is, if we're going to talk about a true leader who is religious or whatever. Whether he's a Christian or Muslim or a Krishna devotee, if it's just name only, that's not the main thing. The main thing is the understanding that who that Supreme Lord is. He's a completely spiritual being, completely full of all wonderful qualities, and we have a connection with him. And it's through his Shakti that we can do anything in this world. Therefore, the real principle is that we have a clear conviction or faith, and operating on that conviction, then we get inspiration from the Lord to do things properly. So that is the ideal king. Of course, not only for kings, for all devotees. The opposite is called the kutinati and dharma dvaji, which means dharma dvaja means waving the flag of dharma. I'm a dharmic person. I'm very religious. I'm pious. I'm whatever like this. So superficial. You know, we do it for other reasons, but we don't have any real conviction in the Lord. And the same with kutinati. We may act like a devotee, but actually inside we have no interest in Krishna. We have no spiritual appreciation of even atma versus body, etc. Yet we'll claim to be devotional. So that's not considered to be very favorable at all for devotional service. It's a great anartha, and it's also a great disturbance to society. There has to be a real, genuine devotion to the Supreme Lord, and then it works on all levels, either as just devotees or as a leader who is a devotee of the country. So where the combination is nice, then ideal leadership is there, and under him, the leadership means he doesn't do everything himself, but he empowers the persons under him to act in a similar way, and then we get an efficient system of governance. So in other words, he is not just a leader in the sense of waving a sword around, but he's also intelligent to make a proper system and empower others to work for him in a very honest way. And of course, if he has ideal character, then the people under him will also be inspired to work in that way. And then the government goes on nicely. So where we see the opposite, then we know that there is corruption from top to bottom. The leaders are corrupt, and then everybody under them is corrupt. And it's very difficult to do anything. Then everybody suffers. Some people have good intentions somewhere along the line, but everybody else has bad intentions. So therefore, everybody's going to shed tears eventually. There's going to be problems. Yeah. So Prabhupada mentions here that one is, of course, the people, and the other is the animals. And of course, third is the plants. Prabhupada doesn't mean the plants, but even the plants have to suffer. Particularly now in this world, the plants suffer also. I didn't have to worry about that previously, but there's so much problem now with extinguishing and chopping down all the forests and the trees and whatever, and indiscriminate destruction of rainforests and whatever. So, big problem on Earth. So not only the animals, but even the plants. There has to be thoughtful procedure on just how much we can use and have no wastage, etc. And then on the level of animals again, animals don't have any government. They don't have a varnashram system. They don't have a king like this. They have small groups that run around and do their thing. Huh? And they eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So they don't have a system. And there's no concept of sin also. And there's even violence. The tiger will eat the deer or the cow or whatever. They do all these things. But this is again the arrangement of the lower species. The human species is different, so we expect them to act differently from the animals. Men cannot act like tigers and elephants and horses and dogs. We have to act in a different way. How? So, scripture gives us the answer. How to act? How to act as a society? Varnashram system and Sanatana Dharma, etc. Dharma. And then for the spiritual aspect, Sanatana Dharma, that is bhakti. So for society in general, social system, is given in the scriptures, the Varnashram system. And then for the spiritual life, bhakti. And if you can't do bhakti, then you have these other little things like Karma Yoga and Gyan Yoga and Astanga Yoga. But ultimately, emphasis should be on Bhakti Yoga, particularly in Kali Yuga. Yeah. So now we're in a particularly problematic situation because Manu's dynasty has gone on strike, so to speak. They marched off to the Himalayas and they're not going to manifest themselves for a long time. So we're deprived of, you know, whatever the Pandavas fought for has disappeared completely in Kali Yuga. It's the nature of Kali Yuga that we're going to have problems. So they gave up and they went off to the Himalayas and they're hiding there and are waiting for the next Satya Yuga. So it's very difficult to reestablish that type of system, that Varnashram Dharma as such. It's going to be impossible on that level. A world government under Varnashram. More helpful, maybe a country or maybe a little group within a country. We can have one of those things. But even then, that's not the highest thing that we want, because that's the social system. What about the spiritual life, the bhakti aspect? So the two things would have to go there together. And even if it is difficult to do the social system, at least the bhakti part should be there. So that's the unfortunate system in Kali Yuga. The social system may get sacrificed somewhere because it's so difficult to get people to follow properly. At least we do the bhakti part of it. And hopefully within that system, whatever it is, there's some tolerance so that we can go on with the practicing devotional service. So in any case, if all fails, we just continue with the bhakti yoga process. Of course, that is the solution for the problems in Kali Yuga. Everything is a fault in Kali Yuga, but everything is also no faults. Everything is faulty, but Nam Sankirtan is the good quality, which counteracts all the bad qualities. And therefore, even the Devatas would say, we also want to come into be born in Kali Yuga because of that. So it is the compensating factor for all of the bad qualities and the disruption of the social system. Here we see the everybody's crying as a result of lack of good government or whatever, which obviously became much worse after the disappearance of Parikshit and the dynasty. Okay, any question?
The king is the link between the Varnashram system and Bhakti Yoga.
Yeah.
But what about sadhus and something else that you said?
They're protected by the king, so they can favorably grow. And just like the brahmanas are not under the king technically, they're advisors to the king, and the king supports the brahmanas. So then he supports all the devotees of all sorts. So they can go on freely with their activity. The king doesn't interfere with that, as long as they don't destroy the system of Dharma, which they won't, because they understand it's also the rule of the Lord.
What about greater dimensional Mahabharata? Is that the same?
What? That they are...
No, do they necessarily function under the protection of the king, or are they beyond that?
If we get to that level, they don't depend on anybody, but certainly they're not going to break the laws of the kingdom, because they have all wonderful qualities. So whatever laws are there in Dharma, they're going to follow those laws to a higher level, actually, than anything else.
You look at someone like Raja, they have this mind,
for
instance.
Yeah. So they don't follow the Vardashram system. He doesn't wear a Brahmin thread, probably. Maybe he did, because his father brought him back to the ashram, but didn't care about it. So basically he's in trance all the time, and he's seeing Krishna, so he doesn't really care about things. And he had no clothes on, obviously, so that was not part of the Vardashram system also. But the people there respect him as being beyond the system, so therefore they don't worry about him. And the king obviously is, when there's devotees, then he honors the devotees more than anybody else. Just like Krishna, when Narada Muni comes, then he honors him, and he's doing arti to Narada Muni when he comes to Dwarka. So the ideal king will worship the devotees nicely. We see that, disappearance of Krishna's dynasty, the children, they made a joke with the sages. They didn't respect them, and then they got cursed for that, and the whole dynasty got cursed for that. So it's expected that the rulers will respect the sages, not just devotees, even the gyanis and the yogis and whatever.
Wasn't Narada Muni one of those sages?
Huh?
Wasn't Narada Muni one of those sages?
In the group of those sages, who was it? Was it Navayogendras? Navayogendras that came at that time?
He
was also there.
Yeah, okay. It seems like Narada was kind of precipitating the Lord's
dynasty. Okay. Yeah.
Which he seems to do quite a lot.
Like he taught Krishna to leave for Mathura to hurry up the killing of the demons, etc. Yeah.
Well, I've read the appearance of Krishna. I'm just wondering if that's a scheduled incarnation, or did he appear?
Yes, scheduled.
There was a need for an empowered ruler, and I'm just wondering whether Venu becoming king was part of that leela, or it just happened to happen there during that circumstance, because he was...
Like Rupa Goswami explains, that all these incarnations are scheduled, so they will appear at certain times in the day of Brahma. So Prithu appears in Swayambhuva Manvantara at a certain time. The Leela could be slightly different how he appears. In this time, this place, he appeared because Vena was such a bad king. But maybe it doesn't have to appear like that all the time, but nevertheless he appears and he levels the earth and does things and helps the people establish agriculture, etc. And then in Vaivasvata Manvantara, in 22nd cycle, Parsaram appears. He's a Shaktivesh avatar also. So they have their particular, even the Shaktivesh avatars appear at certain times. It's not that they appear any time. Then the Lord makes some arrangement, I suppose, for their appearance, so that is when it's necessary.
So I'm just thinking, Vainu's appearance was part of that leela.
Yeah.
Or it just happened to happen at that time.
Well, I guess the same thing happened at that time, and it was also Krishna, the Lord's hand in it somehow, isn't it? Yeah, sure. Of course, we could always say, well, what about the free will of the individuals, and why is he playing around with everybody and making the demon become a demon and whatever like that? But then that we're a little bit stuck into our concept of past, present, future, and we don't know what Trikala Gaya is, and someone they can see beyond time, etc. And somehow he can accommodate the free will of the jiva in there within that whole system of knowing everything.
You mentioned about this King Vina and the Brahman returning the tide of the dead body to the solar system. What that technology they have? Because now we say that modern scientists are trying to clone people and stem cell and all that.
Yeah.
But these Brahmins are very advanced in technology, because from a dead body they can make it, and they can predict who is coming, what type of soul is coming within the body. So it's very intricate type of scientific research or scientific technology they have. Mm-hmm. So what type of technology is that? Mentioned on your data or what?
Well, we find other examples of that also. The Dhritarashtra's wife ended up with 101 children because the embryo divided up in the womb. So, which is normally impossible to get 100 pieces, but somehow they were able to do that, divide them up like that, and then we had these children coming out 100 pieces like that. And there's other stories of sages, I think, that came out of, like they put them in a pot, in artificial insemination or something like that, in a pot. They kept the semen in a pot, and then out of that, somehow they managed to produce a person. So it's just like test tube babies or whatever we have in the modern world, and then the cloning aspect is there from the cells of, somehow out of the cells of Vena, out of his thigh, they took the cells for some reason, and then they were able to get a human being somehow or other like that. So, in other words, what we think was sounds impossible up until now actually is also becoming possible in the modern era. So we can say that therefore whatever happened back there is not so imaginary after all. They also had their techniques of producing, etc. Plus, we also understand that in ancient times we see in the Vedas all sorts of powers available to those on a higher level, like sages and others, that we don't have now. They have greater powers, mystic powers, etc. So things like that were possible. Maybe the technique was different, but what we do now by maybe a grosser method, they could do by a more subtle technique in ancient times. Just like flying. The machines, but it wasn't like, you know, diesel engines and propellers and things like this. But they could fly and they could go wherever they want and go into outer space or whatever like that. But it was a finer technique than a more subtle technique than we have in the modern world. But nevertheless, same purpose was accomplished.
You just mentioned before in relation to my mother's question about free will.
Yeah.
Just see the clarification on that. For the conditioned living entity, how far does that free will go? Because we see, like Krishna explains in the third chapter of Gita, they're forced to act according to laws of nature.
At
the same point, the last thing in destined the role of the Mahalaya Karma, they're walking the path of work. Mm. And until they practice bhakti, they're forced to do that. So, how far does that free will go?
That statement in the third chapter, that everyone's acting according to Prakriti and all that, it's true on one level, particularly for the lower gunas and animals. When we come to the human being, then it becomes a little bit exceptional because that's where we have scripture to tell us what to do and not to do, and we can follow or not follow. So if you are already destined to be an evil person, then what scripture would not be useful for you at all. So later on in the Bhagavad Gita, that says there's five elements in action, including the body and the senses and whatever, and then finally it comes out to the Jiva and Supreme Lord. So Prakriti's there and Jiva is there as Supreme Lord, so it's not just one person decides the action, it's a combination. People in the lower modes, Prakriti dominates. You go into Sattva-good, the Jiva begins to manifest as individual quality of distinction and discrimination much better than Rajagun and Tamagun. Come to bhakti, of course, they were on a higher level completely. So, therefore, human beings also have their free will, but it's more limited in the lower gunas, and it becomes more, let's say, evident in the higher gunas like Sattva Gun.
But actually, it's even within myself, it's like when particular situations arise, then the modes of nature force me to act.
Like
the same as someone situated for a goodness, then I start to contemplate what the outcome might be. If I respond like this, the outcome will be like that. And that's the problem here.
Yeah. So as Krishna tells Arjuna that Arjuna asks, well, what is it that almost beyond our will we're forced to act? And that Krishna says Rajagoda Tama, Krodha, Rajagoda, and anger and lust and anger, Kama and Krodha, in Rajagoda and Tamagun. That's there. In spite of that. Yes, therefore, but the jiva could never say, well, I'm not responsible. Kama did it, Krodha did it, therefore I shouldn't get any karma for it. as a human being, we can't say that. As an animal, you can say that. Or you can do that. There's no problem. No karma. Human being, because we are a human being, then we're obligated to do something about it. In other words, we're supposed to control the kama and the krodha. And we say, well, I couldn't help it because of my anger. If you go to the law court and say that, still you get punished anyway. I was angry, so I killed him. That doesn't make sense. So you're responsible because you're human being. You should have controlled your anger. You should have understood, I'm angry, but I shouldn't do anything. So there's at least as a human being, we have some discriminatory power that we have to use, even if we're in tamagun. We should have that. But obviously, it's more difficult for people in tamagun and easier for people in sattvagun. So the varnashram system is there to gradually get people from the lower gunas to the higher gunas, but it takes birth after birth after birth them to get up to that level. But that's a system by which they can gradually increase their intelligence.
So then, going back to the original point, it seems like, okay, we have the knowledge and we should act because of the modes of nature, we're forced to act in a particular way.
Well, we're kind of forced, but then as a human being, we're not. We're still given the responsibility of controlling that anger and whatever. Yeah.
But we're attached to those modes of nature, we're attached to punishment.
Yeah, so it's difficult. So therefore the government is there to enforce it. You got to do it. If you don't do it, we're going to punish you anyway. So there's a little bit of impetus there to follow it out of fear from the government and punishment.
But therefore brings me back to my original point.
Yeah.
Is how much free will is the condition of the
Yeah, well, as lower animals, no. As human being, because you called a human being and you're supposed to develop with a certain amount of intelligence, if you're a normal person, then when you're an adult, then you get responsible. Then you are. Even if you're in tamagun, still, you have to follow some level, so at least you get protected in the varnashram system, so you don't have to make so many choices as a sutra. When you don't have that, then, of course, it's out of control. No responsibility, whatever. Then you do all sorts of sinful acts, and there's a big problem.
So therefore, I guess Prabhupada's comment foreshadowed this island.
Yeah.
They
can't pull themselves out of it, and the government doesn't do anything either. On a higher level, they don't understand the principles of what they have to do and what they can do and not do. So, whereas varnashram system is quite specific. The limits of what they can do, what they cannot do. But in our society, it's more or less, you know, everything's okay as long as you don't kill people. Maybe that's it, you know. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's their ability. Now, what does Brahma do? He creates everything. Demons, devotees, karmis, yogis, whatever. All species of life come out of Brahma also. A lot of this is mental creation from Brahma. He doesn't have to do anything with his hands. He can just think about it and these things form. So in other words, the way they can deal with material nature is quite different from what we do. So Brahma's the highest living entity, so he does remarkable things, what we would call mystical things, just using his mind to create bodies for living entities, etc. That is very remarkable for us, but not for him. Of course, where is he getting the power from? He meditates on the Supreme Lord, then he gets the power. But anyway, all of these are, you say, just arrangements in the material world. Arranging material energy, that's all it is. And then you can arrange that in different ways. You can do it physically with your hands, or you can do it with the mind. So we don't have that power at the moment so much, but the mystic yogis to some degree get it. And then Lord Brahma's got very great control over that, so he can produce all the bodies for all the living entities with his mind.
Small rooms
Well, we can start like that at least.
Yeah, we're practicing Bhakti.
Yeah.
So what is the goal of the preaching movement?
Yeah.
Is it more of a grassroots thing, like just to change sort of one person's heart at a time?
Yeah. Well, we can go both ways, top down and from bottom up. Of which it's very probably difficult to do the top down because we have elected governments anyway, and then it goes down to the bottom again. So probably it's the best to work at the bottom level of the people in general, and the more higher percentage of population become Krishna conscious, then that's what we can do. And if they get big enough, then they can also change the top levels. Of course, we can go on all levels, but we should get the ground level, and as Lord Chaitanya says, every town and village they should be chanting my name. So.
But also, if people are less able to rise to like the platform of goodness because the whole Bhakti system isn't working, then it is hard for.
That's a problem, and they have no way of getting to Sattva-guna anyway because the Varnashram system's not there. So it's very difficult. The only solution is bypass that system completely and just do bhakti and chant the holy name, which is the Yuga Dharma. And then you can bypass and get beyond Sattva-guna. But then to do that, we have to give them faith. So that's the main thing. You got to cultivate the faith, and then once they get the faith, then they can chant the holy name properly. So we have to give them that faith by Agnata Sukriti and whatever. Okay, Hare Krishna.